Hello Anthony, this is Dennis Stevens here, and I'd like to thank you very much for your letter of the 8th of November 1993, which I received a few days ago. And today is the, let me check it, yes, it's the 19th of November, and it's blazing summer here in Redland Bay. Anne is still keeping up with her practice, with her auditing. She's, as a matter of fact, she's auditing at the moment. Right now she's auditing while I'm cutting this tape. I had to discontinue my auditing practice because my eyesight broke down, and I could no longer read the meter or read the indicators on the PC's face. So I had to, it pretty much knock me out of auditing other people. I won't go into any great history of our exploits since we left London in 1957, Anthony. Most of it you'll find, there's a good write-up, or good rundown of it, not a write-up, a good rundown of it on the introductory tape to some tapes I cut, on the Scientology reminiscences of Anne and I. Terry Scott is in the process of contacting Greg Pickering, who does all the business side of and all the tape copying and so forth for me. Terry's in touch with Greg, and no doubt this material will become available to those who are interested. So I won't repeat it. Just briefly to say that we left London in 57, came to Australia, and had various vicissitudes of training PCs, auditing PCs. I worked for the org for a number of years. Anne never did. She always stayed in private practice, and I left the org. And finally, after many other things, did field auditing, and then I got into Scientology, psychological research. And that is the most important. That's the most important contribution that I've made as far as you and your organisation and your magazine would be concerned, is that I'm the author of TROM, the Resolution of Mind, which, as you know, Terry Scott has got a copy of. He's got a floppy disk of it, and he's in the process of contacting Greg to handle the distribution of it there. But as I say, I'm not I'm in retirement here in Redland Bay. The business side of this is simply not, I'm simply not going to get involved with it. Greg Pickering is the man you want for the business side of this. I don't know whether you have Greg Pickering's address. Greg Pickering is at 20 Foxwood Avenue, Quakers Hill, New South Wales, 2763, Australia. His name is spelt Greg, G-R-E-G, Pickering, P-I-C-K-E-R-I-N-G, Greg Pickering, 20 Foxwood, F-O-X-W-O-O-D, Foxwood Avenue, Quakers Hill, Quakers as in Quakers Oats, Quakers Hill, New South Wales, 2763, Australia. That's Greg. Greg is a Scientologist and a Scientology archivist. He has one of the better collection of Scientology archives that I know of, and he's still collecting. He's still going strong. He's a great character, Greg. I think you'd like Greg. In fact, if he thinks you've got some Scientology materials over there in Denmark that might be of interest to him, he'll be on to you. He's an avid collector, is Greg. So that's roughly the position at the moment, Anthony. Can I call you Tony for short? Does anyone ever call you Tony? I know your name is spelled A-N-T-O-N-Y rather than A-N-T-H-O-N-Y. But that doesn't prevent you from being called Tony for short. Most Anthonys do become Tonys, don't they? Or do they become Ants? I think you prefer to be called Ant. But that seems rather insect-like to me. So I'd rather call you Tony than Anthony. I might call you Anthony or call you Tony. I'm sure you don't mind either way. I'm sure you, sometime in your life you've been called Tony. By the way, while we're on the subject of names, Anne and I, our surname is spelled S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S. Not, repeat, not, S-T-E-V-E-N-S. You might as well get it right on your files while you're, you know, while we're about it. Stevens, as in Stevens Inc. You've got to the ripe old age of 63, have you, Anthony? Well, I could believe that. I could believe that because I'm 66, and when I remember you on the HPA course in London, I would have said that you were 2 or 3 years younger than I was. So that would be about right. So I'm 66 at the moment. I can't give you Anne's age because I'm a gentleman, and it's ungentlemanly for a man to hand out his wife's age. So I won't be able to give you, I won't give you Anne's age. I can't give it to you. Sorry. Now, regarding articles for your magazines, Anthony. I believe you have two magazines. There's one called US, which seems to go out in German or Danish, and the other one, which is in English, the International Viewpoints, the IVY. Because of my atrocious eyesight, writing an article, typing an article, just isn't on. There just isn't any way I could do it at the moment. The only way I can get an article to you is to tape it. It's to just talk, and then of course you've got the horrors of transcribing the taped talk into an article. I know it's not convenient. It means an extra veer on the line. It means somebody's got to have to sit down and go through the article and turn it into the English type word and punctuate it. And they've got to have the person who does it has got to know the subject that's being talked about, so they can intelligently transcribe the tape and not make a complete dog's breakfast out of it and miss all the importances and fill it with the unimportances and delete the importances. I mean, I'm sure you do understand as a professional. You would understand better than me the problems of transcribing a tape into the written word and preparing it for publication for an article. But that, unfortunately, is the way it's going to have to be, Anthony. That's the only way it's going to have to be for articles from me. So I might speak on a subject, and I'll tell you when I'm going to start writing an article, and I'll tell you when I'll stop writing it. You know, at the beginning of the article and the end, and all that's in between is the material for the article. You see what I mean? But actually getting it onto paper, that, of course, that I can't help you with anymore because of my eyesight. Now, that might be prohibitively difficult, might be impossible. I just don't know. I don't know, you know, I don't know what your setup is over there. So anyway, I'll take a chance on it, and I'll give you an article now on this tape, and you can let me know. If it's of no use to you, it doesn't matter. I haven't lost anything except my time. So, so there we are. But before I give you an article, I better give you some. You'd like to know where we are, Redland Bay. It doesn't sound very much. It's obviously on the coast somewhere. But look, I'll give you some data of where we are and what it's like here in Redland Bay. I don't know whether you know Australia. You may have been here. You may know the country well. But anyway, I'll assume that you don't. So anyway, we want to know where Redland Bay is. We're in southern Queensland. If you dig out an atlas of Australia and you look at the easternmost extension of Australia, just north of that easternmost extension of Australia, you'll see what looks like a little finger, an island, very close into the coast. And that island is off the coast of southern Queensland, and that island is called Stradbroke Island. And, we can see Stradbroke Island when we look out the window of our house across Moreton Bay. There's a bay, the expanse of water between the Australian coast and Stradbroke Island is called Moreton Bay. So when we look across Moreton Bay, we can see Stradbroke Island across the bay. So that will tell you where we are there in Australia. We're at Redland Bay, and that's our location. We're at Redland Bay is 27.5 degrees south of the equator, and that makes our that makes our climate subtropical as compared to England's, and I believe Denmark, cool temperate. Yes, Denmark is cool temperate as well. I used to work in the weather office many, many years ago, so I do know a bit about climate and meteorology. Our climate here is not very much like England's climate or Denmark's climate. Denmark's climate would be much the same as England, except your winters are a little bit colder. You get a little bit more snow, a little bit more cold in the winter, and much the same warmth in the summer as England gets. I think I pretty well know Denmark's climate. But being subtropical, oh yes, the temperature reference, 27.5 degrees south, is, give you some idea of where that is in relation to Europe. We're at the same latitude, we're at the same distance from the equator as the Canary Islands off the coast of West Africa. We're at the same latitude as the Canary Islands. I suppose we'd be about 1,700 or 1,800 miles nearer the equator than southern England or Denmark, maybe even 1,900 miles nearer the equator than Denmark. So we're a long way nearer the equator than where you are, hence our subtropical climate here. Our vegetation is a mixture of the natural Australian vegetation, the gum trees of the South Australia, but we've also got a lot of palm trees and ferns which creep down from the tropical vegetation up north in the tropics. We're only 27.5 south, we're only 4 degrees, that's 280 miles south of the Tropic of Capricorn here in Redland Bay, so we're not far out of the tropics. So our vegetation here is, there's a lot of tropical vegetation. Everything grows here, everything grows large, spiders grow enormous. When I first got here I saw a praying mantis that was all of 12 inches long looking at me in through the window pane from a bush outside, and he nearly scared the living daylights out of me to see such an enormous praying mantis. But evidently these things are quite normal in the subtropics and tropics. It all grows here. We've got a banana plantation opposite, a big commercial banana plantation opposite our house. Bananas grow here quite plentifully, and all tropical fruits will grow here, of course, mangoes and so forth. They all grow here in the subtropical climate of Redland Bay. We don't really get any winters here at all. The coldest of summer's days, sorry, the coldest of winter's days, the temperature will get up to 65 Fahrenheit. You're still on Fahrenheit scale? But you know Fahrenheit anyway, because you learnt it as a child at school. The coldest of winter days, it still gets up to 65, and that's in July, our winter's month. But by August, it's up to 77. The days are getting up to 70, 72. By September, October, it's up to 75, 80 degrees again. From there on, end of September, it's summer. And it stays summer right the way through to the following April. Our winters are very, very dry in Redland Bay. They're typical of the subtropical climates. Our winters are very, very dry, bone dry almost. We hardly ever get any rain here in the winter months. Our springs are very dry. September, October are beautifully dry. If you ever want to come to Redland Bay, by the way, come to the coast of southern Queens, and the best time to come is September and October, our early spring. The weather is like a beautiful English summer here in September and October. By November, where we are now, it's starting to get a shade too hot, and we get thunderstorms in November as the monsoon trough starts to move south over the tropics in northern Australia, and we start to get the storms, instability of the atmosphere, and the temperature starts to creep up, just gets up to over 80. It's that today. It's a very hot day today. We've got a warm northeasterly coming off the cold sea. The temperature's up at about 85, it's going to creep up to near 90 today, or even on the coast today it's going to get up to near 90, which is not unusual at all for Redland Bay in November. And there's not a cloud in the sky. It's beautiful summer's weather here. It's a perfect place to retire to. Redland Bay must have one of the best climates in the world here. It's a beautiful strip of coast, this area of southern Queensland. And anyway, what was I saying? Yes, October, November, December, towards the end of December, the wet season starts, and we get most of our rain in January, February and March. And also during January and February, the atmosphere in Redmond Bay takes on the consistency of a Turkish bath. Unless you're used to it, it's quite horrifying. The humidity is up very high, the temperature's up in the mid-80s, and the humidity's up in the mid-80s, and it's like that day and night. It's strictly Turkish bath weather. The only thing you can wear satisfactorily is a towel. That is Redland Bay, southern Queensland in January and February, in midsummer. Then it starts to dry out, and January, February, March, we get most of our rain, and April, May, it starts to dry out, and by June, of course, it's dried right out again. And there we are. That's the whole sequence of events. It's very predictable, our climate. It doesn't do anything peculiar, except we get an occasional cyclone, which gives us a shock. But they usually ground much further north than here. But we have had them sail past cyclones. We do get them. It's quite possible that one day Redmond Bay will be swept off the, knocked absolutely flat by some enormous cyclone. It's quite possible, because we're in the cyclone area. So anyway, that's pretty well a brief resume, Anthony. This, as I say, is Redland Bay is a beautiful place to retire to. It's a bit warm here. The climate is not really conducive to working in the summer. It's all right in the winter months, but from November through to about March or April, you know, it's a bit warm. It's a bit warm and it's a bit sticky, and that's why most of the big towns in Australia, further south, Sydney and Melbourne, further south, where they do escape they might not escape the heat, but they certainly don't get the high humidity like we get up here in the subtropical and tropical part of Australia. Of course, we're spared the extreme heat of Australia, the Australian bush. You only have to go 20 or 30 miles inland in the summer to get temperatures of over 100 degrees every day. That's the Australian bush. But fortunately, the prevailing wind here is off the sea. And if it weren't for that, the east coast of Australia would be uninhabitable. It's only because we have an onshore wind that this coastline is inhabitable. The west coast of Australia has an offshore wind, and it's a desert. So at these latitudes, the west coast of Australia, there's no habitation there at all. It's just a desert. It's quite uninhabitable. It's absolutely bone dry. And nobody lives there, so that's why all the people live in the east, because we've got an onshore wind. Today there's a beautiful sea breeze blowing in. It's coming in off the Coral Sea, but it's cool. It'll keep the temperature down on the coast to the mid or high 80s. 20 or 30 miles inland today, it'll get up over 100. It will. You only have to go 20 or 30 miles inland today, it'll be up near 100. So this is an entirely different climate from Northern Europe, from England and Denmark. It's quite different, completely different. Couldn't be more different. I've just been reconsidering, Tony, the idea of sending you an article on this tape. I don't think it's for two reasons. I don't think it's a good idea. The first is that I don't know whether it's possible for you to transcribe. You see, I might spend some time preparing an article and read it off to you, only to hear from you to say that thanks very much, but it's useless to me. So I don't want to do that. You may not have any easy means of transcribing. And the other reason why I won't do so is that I've just remembered that a couple of days ago, a few days ago, I received a very interesting tape from Terry Scott, and I replied to Terry Scott's tape, and what came up in my reply was some material which can easily be knocked into shape for an article. What I gave him was essentially the differences between Scientology and TROM, and the similarities between Scientology and TROM. And in other words, I went into a comparison of the two subjects in some considerable depth there. And in covering this material, Tony, it also went into the subject of the use of TROM how TROM could be used to clear the planet, so achieve one of the long-term goals of, that Scientology set out to achieve but failed to achieve, and pointed out how it could be done with TROM. So there's historical material there, and so on. So all you've got to do is to get Terry to knock this into shape for you for an article, or alternatively to get him to send you a copy of this tape, to copy it and send it to you, and you'll be able to knock it into shape with an article. Now, I believe that Terry is a professional writer, so that he should, from his knowledge of Scientology, he should be able to knock that in, what I've sent him, into shape for an article for IVY. He also has in his possession the full floppy disk of TROM, and so he's in a position to give you a review of the book there as it stands. So Terry is in a position to give you some material for publication there without me. In other words, there's plenty of material there already in the hands of Terry Scott that's available for your magazine, if you can get Terry to prepare it for you, rather than me coming on the line and handing out any more material at this juncture. I'd rather it work that way. In other words, exhaust what you've already got, exhaust the existing material that you have in your possession on the subject of TROM and on that tape I've recently given Terry. Now, you follow what I'm getting at here, Tony? It's simply a matter of cleaning up the comm line, cleaning up the bric-a-brac that's already on the lines before I add any new material on the lines. So, rereading your letter, you said it would be great if you could write for Ivy. I think one of the highest, I'm reading off your letter, I think one of your highest priorities is recording honestly how the old days were, both as regards Ron and outside of his immediate sphere. I think there was only one Scientologist in Denmark who was about in 1965. Yes, you then go on to say how was Ron in the 1950s? This is the article of Ken Urquhart. Yes, well, I could write such an article, but if Ken Urquhart was around in the 1950s and so forth, and close to Ron in the 1950s, no doubt, well, I don't suppose I could do much more than Ken Urquhart has done. So, you know, without the danger of duplicating there. You see what I'm getting at? I wouldn't want to duplicate Ken Urquhart's article. Oh, there's one thing I can answer. You said so that very few people, even in the Church of Scientology or outside, brackets, I'm outside, you don't say whether you came out, into brackets. Well, I don't know about came out. Like most Scientologists in Australia during the heavy ethics period a few years ago, darn near the whole field in Australia were declared as suppressives or squirrels and so forth, and that included Anne and I. We weren't overlooked. We also were given the honour of being declared. So I suppose that means we're on the outside. I certainly have received no communication from the Church for a number of years, and I have no wish to receive any communication from them at this juncture. So I suppose I'm on the outside too, you might say. But I didn't put myself on the outside. It was somebody else's idea. I didn't put myself on the outside. If I am on the outside, it's them that put me out, not me. We have no organisation of this idea of the independent Scientologists. No organisation of independent Scientologists in Australia like you have in the UK. like Terry was telling me about on his tape, where you have independents meet and they have little congresses and so forth. We have no organisation like that at all in Australia. It must be rather nice, but we certainly don't have anything like that. We just have a series of old timers who were all declared some years ago, and since then the org in the various towns in Australia picks up youngsters off the streets of the big towns and drags them into, or not drags them, but gets them to come in and into the Church of Scientology and offers them courses on training and courses of processing at vastly inflated prices in my mind, and so on. And that's apparently the mock-up at the moment. Those who have been declared are off the lines are pretty glad to be out of it. And from what I can hear, what's going on down there in the church at the moment, I'm pretty glad to be out of it too. I wouldn't want my name associated with what appears to be going on in the Church of Scientology in Australia at the moment, and probably as much the same as what's going on in the church in England, Denmark, and all over the world. But anyway, there's material about that on that tape I sent Terry Scott, so he's in position to give you my thoughts on that subject in relation to TROM and Scientology and so on. It's a very, very interesting tape I sent Terry. When I look back at it in review, it's an absolutely fascinating tape. It's something that anyone who's interested in TROM, the first thing a person wants to know when they hear about TROM is, well, how does it relate to Scientology? Well, this tape I sent to Terry gives you the relationship and tells you what the advantages are of TROM and so forth, if any, advantages of TROM over Scientology. And there are considerable, I can assure you, considerable advantages. They're all mentioned on that tape. So really, really, Tony, I think at this stage, if you chase up Terry Scott, he's the professional writer, he should be able to transcribe that little tape for you and knock that into shape as an article. And also he should be able to prepare a review for you. He's also in touch with a guy called Des Popham, an old time technical expert of Scientology, who's going to come in and have a good look at my data. So Terry Scott will be able to take technical advice from Des Popham on the subject. So he's not alone there in evaluating my data. He's got a technical expert at his elbow to help him, a Scientology technical expert, if he needs such a technical expert to get another opinion. So he should be able to prepare you a review of TROM. I think it would be better that review should come from an independent person rather than me. If anything I write on the subject of TROM can only be taken as me peddling and advertising my own work. So it's better if it comes from independently. And Terry Scott is quite independently of me. So and he's known in England and Denmark. I mean, everyone knows Terry Scott because he's a great communicator, so they know that he's not in any way associated with Dennis Stevens in Australia. So it'll be whatever you get from Terry Scott will be an unbiased opinion of you know, in the material that he sends you in relation to this tape that I sent him, and also in relation to the review of TROM. So it'll be an unbiased opinion and so on. Rather that than me attempting to write any reviews of my own book, which can only be, no matter how I phrase it, no matter how whatever I say, people will say, oh well, he's obviously going to say nice things about his work because he wrote it and he wants to peddle it. So I can't escape that, you see. But I can escape it by being done by an independent reviewer. And I think Terry Scott, as a professional writer, is capable of doing that, capable of doing the job for you. So there, chase up Terry Scott. Chase up Terry Scott, Tony, and I think he'll be able to give you some interesting material. I've got a feeling that TROM's going to take the old Scientology, the independent field, by storm over there in the UK. We've got nothing like the independent field over here, so I've never had anything to do with, you know, I've had difficulty in getting my data out to anyone. But now there's this, you've got this little group over there of old-time Scientologists and so forth, and I think you'll find that TROM will go around like wildfire. They'll love it, you know. Anyone who's had a case gained in Dianetics and Scientology, and who's a pretty easy running free clear, will take to TROM like a duck to water, and they'll have all the case gains they've ever wanted, which they never got from Scientology, or maybe they never got from Scientology, they can get from TROM. But anyway, and also if they got all the gains they want out of Scientology, that there's still, they might find that there's a lot of gains to be made in TROM that they never got from Scientology. So it's they can. I think the independents over there will find this. That TROM is a very, very useful thing, particularly as it's a do-it-yourself psychotherapy. So it's not going to cost them. It's not going to cost them a cent to do it. All they're going to need is the data. Once they've got the material of TROM in their hand, it's all there. It's strictly a do-it-yourself. So it's nobody breathing down their neck asking them to come in and pay out any vast amounts of money for professional auditing or professional training. It's strictly do-it-yourself once you know how to do it. There. But all that's in TROM, in the write-up of TROM. What permitted TROM to occur was some technical breakthroughs I made in my psychological research. And these technical breakthroughs allowed me to create a do-it-yourself subject there, which Scientology could never have become. Technically, there was a flaw in Scientology. Well, not a flaw, but technically there was data missing in Scientology, which I discovered. And the data I discovered permit me to turn the subject into a do-it-yourself subject, rather than an auditor, a separate therapist and pre-clear subject, where you're worked on by a separate operator. In TROM, you become your own auditor. You become both auditor and pre-clear simultaneously. There, and it's only because of the technical breakthrough I made that allowed this to happen. It couldn't happen in Scientology. There's no way you can take Scientology data and Scientology processes with the understanding of that exists in Scientology and make self-auditing a safe procedure. But you can do it with TROM, because there's a technical understanding which Scientology didn't possess, which exists in TROM, which makes it possible. So we can now clear the planet on a do-it-yourself basis. It's possible to do it with TROM if anybody wants to do it. So that the floodgates are now open like they were back in 1950. But it's now, we can now achieve the goals that Ron set out to do in 1950 to clear the planet, but we can do it with TROM. So that's briefly in a nutshell is what's going on. That's TROM, and that data is on that tape I sent. All this, you know, the difference between TROM and Scientology, and what we can do with TROM, all that is on that tape that I sent Terry Scott, and which he will have in his possession by the time you receive this tape. So get on to Terry and get him to pass this material over to you, and between the two of you, you should be able to get something worked out for publication. Okay, well, I'll get off the line now, Anthony. I'll transcribe this tape onto another bit of tape. I'll Dolbyize it. I always Dolbyize my tape, so when you play it, you might have to turn your tone control down, otherwise it'll be a bit scratchy. The quality of the tape, I won't use a particularly expensive bit of tape. Tapes are very, very expensive in Australia, and unless the tape is going to be used backwards and forwards an awful lot of the time, I've got into the habit of using quite cheap tape. So it'll be a cheap bit of tape. The quality of the tape won't be particularly you know, it, the quality of the spool and so forth, it'll be a cheap tape, but it'll be listenable. But I wouldn't use it all that much. It might disintegrate. You know what I mean? It's not a top, quality piece of emulsion. But because it's not going to be used very much for anything else, I won't send you any great cheap tape. If I was sending you material which was going to be turned into an article, for example, I would send you good quality tape, because I'd know the tape would have to be put backwards and forwards through a machine dozens and dozens of times to be transcribed. Well, I don't think there's anything on this tape I'm going to send you that's going to have to be transcribed, so I can send you a bit of cheap tape. Okay. Rightio, Tony. Well, that's about all the best for now. And so bye-bye. All the best. Hope to hear from you soon.